When we catch a criminal, what are we supposed to do? Well, I think for the good of society, you're supposed to break the bad behavior. But we aren't breaking the bad behavior. We are not injuring criminals enough to the point where they are incapacitated as a general rule, to where they are dissuaded, to the point where copper pipe in churches is safe. So we could take two approaches. One, we could let people defend their property. Or two, we could put a leash on everybody. And so what we're doing is saying everyone has to be treated the same like a bad dog, put you on a leash, and you can't carry more than 10 pounds of non-ferrous metal without being a criminal unless you do something extra. And then you got to do something extra here and something extra there, and it's a leash. It's a leash when you have to use your own time and resources to figure out your income tax. It's a leash when you withdraw money from a 401k or a health savings account, or put it in for that matter. It's a leash when you got to do this, and it's a leash when you got to do that. And we're all being lumped together. And this is just increasing bureaucracy and people not wanting to take the law into their own hands. Well, of course, the law is in somebody else's hands, and you have less and less say over your own life. Well, am I being paranoid? Well, you might think so. So let me address that. Also, in the South Carolina Code, Title 44, Health, under Chapter 53, Poisons, Drugs, and Other Controlled Substances, we have Section 44, 53, 520, forfeitures. What can be forfeited? Well, all property, including but not limited to monies, negotiable instruments, securities, or other things of value furnished or intended to be furnished by any person in exchange for a controlled substance, and all proceeds, including but not limited to monies in real and personal property traceable to any exchange, or all monies seized in close proximity to forfeitable controlled substances, drug manufacturing or distributing paraphernalia, or in close proximity to forfeitable records of the importation, manufacturing, or distribution of controlled substances, and all money seized at the time of arrest or search involving violation of this article. If the person from whom the monies were taken can establish to the satisfaction of a court of competent jurisdiction that the monies seized are not products of illegal acts, the monies must be returned pursuant to court order. So the burden of proof, my friend, is on you. The leash is on you. Now, of course, it might be a nice shepherd with a hand on the leash, but the shepherd being a human being, or perhaps a sequence of human beings as you have people come in and go out of the office, becomes wolves. And so if we look at an article by John Burnett on the NPR website, Cash Seizures by Police Prompt Court Fights, second installment of a four-part series, again by John Burnett, NPR website, Cash Seizures by Police Prompt Court Fights. And it starts off, the law states that authorities can confiscate your money without ever charging you with a crime, as long as they can prove it's tied to illegal activity. But sometimes it happens even when they can't. And then it goes on to describe Jim Wells County in Texas, where they make it a habit to confiscate money. And as you can imagine, lots of drug money moves through Texas back to Mexico. And they've used this money, of course, to buy lots of equipment and guns, to get cops protecting the schools. So there's been good of it, but that's the problem. You can mix good and bad. You can put a leash on the good dog and the bad dog at the same time. So let's look at the case of Javier Gonzalez. I'm not sure if I'm saying the name right, but the Gonzalez, I'm pretty sure, is right. On October 20th, 2005, Gonzalez says he was driving south on U.S. Highway 281 from Austin to Brownsville, that's in Texas again, to look at a car and buy a gravestone for his dying aunt. And that's what he says. I don't know. He was carrying roughly $10,000 in a briefcase. And he says, he asked me to get out of the car. I did. He asked me for my driver's license and insurance. I gave it to him. He asked me if I had weapons, drugs, or large amounts of money. I told him I did. So the deputies handed Gonzalez a waiver. If he signed over the money and did not claim the currency, he could walk away free. If he did not sign the waiver, he would be arrested for money laundering. So Gonzalez signed the waiver and gave up rights to his money. Then he hired an attorney who filed a federal civil rights lawsuit. The county fought it and lost. In April, I guess this would be 2009, in April, the county returned his roughly $10,000 and paid him $110,000 in damages plus attorney's fees. Ron Barroso, a longtime criminal defense attorney in nearby Corpus Christi, I'm going off the article still, who was not associated with the case, says, quote, "I believe a lot of these stops are fishing expeditions, nothing more. They figure they stop enough people out there that they can profile for whatever reason. Sooner or later, they are going to hit on something." And then the article explains, civil forfeiture is different from criminal forfeiture. In criminal forfeiture, the taking of property is usually carried out after the owner is convicted of a crime. In civil forfeiture, the government seizes the property, in this case the currency, without ever charging the person with the crime. The government must show by preponderance of the evidence that the money is dirty, then it's up to the owner to prove that his cash is clean. So here's another case. The Hunt case. Christopher Hunt, 28-year-old black American, who owns his auto detailing business in Atlanta. He says he was driving south on I-75 through central Georgia on the way to see his mother in his hometown of Dublin. He was wearing his hair in braids and driving a friend's orange Dodge Charger when two Lamar County Sheriff's deputies pulled him over for speeding. The incident report states they became suspicious when they saw Hunt had a licensed handgun lying on the console, and that he had bloodshot eyes. His hands trembled, and he and his passenger gave evasive answers when questioned. What really got their attention was the $5,581 Hunt had stuffed in his pockets, which he said was the weekend profits from his car dealing business. Hunt says, "They just told me it looked like drug money. That was all." The deputies found no drugs or alcohol in the car. Hunt was not arrested for any offense, nor was he written up for a traffic violation. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Macon, Georgia, has now initiated proceedings to keep Hunt's money based on probable cause. That is, proceeds traceable to a controlled substance. Among their strongest evidence, the deputy smelled burnt marijuana. The deputy observed, quote, "an untestable," end quote, amount of what appeared to be marijuana on the floorboard. Drug dogs detected drug residue on the currency when it was brought back to the station. Hunt has not been charged with any crime as a result of the traffic stop. So why is the government taking his over $5,000? So you can go on to read that article. But the point is, this sort of thing has been happening, and it's been happening for a long time. And as the article continues elsewhere, it says, "We had the same forfeiture thing in the 1990s, which led to the Civil Asset Forfeiture Reform Act of 2000, or CAFRA, C-A-F-R-A, Civil Asset Forfeiture Reform Act. And under this act, if you win your case, If the government loses a civil forfeiture challenge, it must reimburse the lawyer. But many individuals are unaware of the CAFRA, which gives you that advantage. So I'm letting you know you have that advantage if you have a civil forfeiture of your cash. You can hire an attorney and challenge, and if you win, the government must pay the attorney's fees. So that, my friends, is how one size fits all when it's a leash. So what we do to our good dogs, apparently we do to ourselves.